So if you think we said anything interesting or important, just raise your hand and we'll repeat it for you.
So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, well, it's good to see everybody. Welcome to the balcony.
We won't forget you. Yeah. Well, we hope to share a little bit about us tonight and our work with art and how art helps community and build community in areas of conflict. So before we begin, would you join me in a word of prayer? May God bless us with discomfort and easy answers, half truths and superficial relationships, so that we will live deeply in our hearts. May God bless us with anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people and the earth, so that we will work for justice, equity, and peace. May God bless us with tears to shed for those who suffer, so that we will reach out our hands to comfort them and change their pain to joy. And may God bless us with the foolishness to think we can make a difference in our world, so that we will do the things which make others say cannot be done. Praise be to you, O Lord.
Amen.
So, we want to start with a reference point of where we work. And this quote from Buechner has spoken to us for a long time, especially when we've worked in areas of such conflict and divide between people and communities. So if we are to love our neighbors before doing anything else, we must see our neighbors with our imagination as well as our eyes. That is to say, like artists, we must see not just their faces, but the life behind and within their faces. Here it is love that is the frame we see them in.
Well, take a look at what really has propelled our work. Yeah, this is a film from 2009.
So perhaps what walls do most is separate us from the possibility of relationship. When we first started going to Northern Ireland about 17 years ago, we didn't know what it was like to live separated by walls. And not only walls, physical walls that divided neighborhoods, but also walls that prevented people from understanding someone who was different from themselves. And so we brought creativity, or what we felt was art, and another way to express ourselves with that, because...
Yeah, and I think the reason why we did that is because that's what we did. If you were a musician, you would bring music, and if you were an accountant, you would bring that skill. And so we brought the only thing that we had to bring, and that was doing art.
And also the feeling that if we can express ourselves in a positive way, it's going to come out in some other, more destructive way.
So we began to wrestle with a lot of the questions about living divided, what do the walls mean, what does it do to people, and how might we make an effect on that. And so as we started to ask the questions, they'd come up like, can the arts provide us with a visual language? We're mediating broken relationships and cultural divides. We didn't have the answers, but we wondered. And so we started making art.
And making art in communities that weren't using art. So it also brought a question, is destructive behavior the creative self turned upside down? If you don't create, how does that come out?
Yeah, where does all that energy go? Go somewhere, right?
And many times in Belfast, it ends up with something like this. Or many other parts of the world, for that matter. in our own backyards. So the question also, can art help discover the spirit which unites rather than divides us? Does art and creativity give us another language where words can't go, where words butt doctrines and dogmas and points of view? Can it?
And so when we started going to Northern Ireland, this is what it looked like. Not all the time, but a great deal of the time.
Not a great vacation spot. Yeah. And it also raised the question, how might creativity and imagination help us find our way back to our humanity when we work together to create something together that we can't create alone? So we also found it important to live in this tension.
Yeah, I think it was really important for us to be able to understand what people were experiencing was to go and live with them. So, you know, we would go 2 and 3 weeks at a time, and we would always come back and practice, you know, the power of present and being with people is a very powerful thing.
So we went to East Belfast.
Yeah, and actually, when you think of the walls in East Belfast, there's not just one wall, there's actually 27 miles of walls. Even still today, there's 14 actual different walls that divide neighbor from neighbor. And most of our friends in Belfast had never, if they were Catholic, had never met a Protestant until they were in their 20s and went to college. And if they were Protestant, they never met a Catholic. Because it's dangerous. It's dangerous.
It's very dangerous. And while the walls did serve a purpose, right? I mean, there was a certain amount of safety that might come from having those walls. Now they're coming to the difficult task of, do we bring them down? And so we were fortunate enough one time we had a meeting with Jerry Adams and a number of people that we were working with. And a question was asked of him, when will you bring the walls down? And his response, while political, was also when you're ready to bring them down. So in other words, when it happens on the ground level in your neighborhoods, neighborhood by neighborhood, when you feel secure enough to bring those down, then we'll bring those down.
So when we first started, probably in 2002, was our first visit, this was where we worked. And this was a little Methodist church and also a community center. And the interesting thing about this place was that it was right on the peace line. So the wall would come right up to the edge of the building on the right side. You can see it start to come on the other side, and it goes out the other side. The thing actually, on one side it opened to the Catholic side, and on the back door opened to the Protestant side. So they could do community work because nobody had to go into each other's neighborhoods and be seen.
And no one knew who was working.
So, yeah, nobody knew. And when we went to, actually when we would worship on Sunday mornings, the police would stand guard and the doors would be locked. It was the weirdest thing to go to church and have the doors have to lock behind you.
So we are also intrigued by the art there. And much of the art looks like this.
So there, a lot of the art is used to divide people. Like, we seek nothing but the elementary. I can't hardly read it.
But the elementary right implanted in every man, the right, if you're attacked, to defend.
Yeah, to defend yourself. Yourself is what it says.
Or to intimidate.
Yeah. So if your four-year-old wakes up in the morning and looks out her window, his window, this is not something that would be pleasant to see.
So we didn't quite understand this.
At the beginning.
And of course it raised another question. Creativity flourishes in a community of trust and acceptance. So if there isn't trust and acceptance, what happens?
But inside this little community center, a lot was going on. So one of the interesting things, and it reminds me of Holden, in that the meal is important, and eating together was probably the most important thing. So Catholics and Protestants would get together and have tea. And we did a lot of eating And we did a lot of listening. And we made a lot of art.
So tomorrow in our workshop, we're going to actually be doing this art right here, where we've worked with kids and adults throughout Northern Ireland to give them a chance to paint and create and talk. So we like to say the art of possibility, right? All things are possible if you can imagine it or reimagine it. So this is a story that in East Belfast in 2011, this is what it looked like. So fairly recently, it had erupted out of violence. This is in an area that is always prone to violence because the neighborhoods come so close together. It's called the Short Strand. Well, in 2011, I had this idea to bring my KU, University of Kansas, design students over because we were going to create a mural project, and the whole intent of the project was to create a mural that anyone of any skill, of any age, could come and participate in.
And I said, oh honey, the parents are going to love it that you're going to take your their children.
We didn't show them this image.
Yeah.
So now fast forward to 2012, and our design team came up with a mural, and we were working on the Protestant side, and they had given us a tunnel, a rail stop tunnel that was a very heavily traveled area, and it also bridged the two neighborhoods. So this is their RKU team working. And then we all went over to Northern Ireland to paint the mural with the community. So this is gathering up. We have the community leader, Elfie, who started gathering up the kids and the teens and the young adults so that we could create this mural together. Now, in theory, it was if we create something together, will we have ownership to that? Right, we create something as a team, as a group, where we have a sense of ownership to that art. So, the interesting thing is that we started with a small group, and like anything, it's like the pebble in the pond, and it begins to kind of ripple out. People would come through the tunnel and ask what we were doing. It's more like, what are you doing? And it's like, can we help you there? And of course, we said yes. So it just grew and grew and grew with the amount of people that participated in this art. And the theme we had used, because up to that point, most of the murals were their memorial murals, and it was the only way of looking at art, at least in public. And so this mural, we used a phrase, transformation leads to growth, and growth leads to transformation, which their officials said, yep, let's go for that. So we began a painting.
Chuck makes it sound like he just took a couple of KU kids over to Belfast and got out some paint. But it takes a lot of organization,
a lot of people help.
Transportation, the different political
fundraising. We had to raise money to
many,
get
things
there.
So.
And all the channels to the
So pool. Like what kind of influence does painting the tunnel have? Like why? Right? Why paint the tunnel? Well, this is why, to paint the tunnel.
So it brought kids of every age. Now, I thought this was brilliant. Somebody on our team said, we had these two little girls that came and said, can we help you with the mural? And we said, well, of course you can help. Of course, we're trying to figure out how that could work, right? So someone had the brilliant idea. It's like, we'll draw a line.
See,
the length
there's
of the
this
tunnel,
little this little line
and
down
if you
there.
Paint this color below that line, you can paint whatever you want.
So they painted flowers, and they painted all day long.
And then they filled it all in.
So we painted the tunnel, and we also painted other things other than the tunnel. We painted the community leaders.
Yeah.
We painted ourselves.
And the more colors you had on the hands, it's kind of a sign of your participation.
And then people started coming.
Yeah, and then classes started coming. And teachers started bringing kids over from the other neighborhood to talk about it. And. The BBC showed up, and all kinds of folks, because it was so exciting to have not just a mural by the Americans, but it was really about letting the whole community participate in the project.
And it also was in color, and most of the murals are black and white, and at least the ones of the conflict.
My tired KU kids. So that was the first year. Then the second year,
we decided, let's go back. And so we had another team of Kansas designers, and they were all seniors, and we said, let's go to the Catholic side and work over on the Catholic side. So we'll speed this story up a little bit. We'll let you show a video here. Some of the logistics, like the simplest things, we didn't have a ladder. I mean, it's a neighborhood that doesn't have much. So they didn't have a ladder. And so I had to figure out how we're going to get to the top of this 11-foot wall. And I knew they had a ladder on the other side of the street in the Protestant neighborhood.
Because he had been there the year before, and he knew they had a ladder.
So I'm like, I marched myself across the street from the Catholic neighborhood to the Protestant neighborhood and looked for the people that I knew over there. Of course, I couldn't find anybody, and someone asked in the station, they said, can I help you? And I said, well, I need a ladder. And as soon as I spoke, because we wouldn't be that American artist, Chuck, from the United States, right? And so I said, I just need a ladder. He goes, what do you need a ladder for? I said, well, we need it because we're doing a mural on the other side of the street. And I knew what I was asking, right? There was a huge pregnant pause, and he said, for you, we'll do it. And so he let me have that ladder. We marched it across the street, and we used it. But it was more of like him, the way I saw it, was that he had to accept that trust to say, okay, I know this is going against what I believe. I know it's a simple task. And he honored that, and he let us use it. And then on the other side of the street, they allowed the acceptance of the Protestant ladder.
Yeah, it was a Protestant ladder. I know, it sounds crazy, doesn't it? But it's so true, it's a Protestant ladder.
Sometimes you just don't know when you get yourself into crazy things, right? Well, all those years in working in Belfast.
Yeah, and I think about 12 years.
12 years. Or so. And we're still going. We were there just last year. Well, then we were asked to go to this part of the planet.
And paint on this wall.
Yeah. They have even bigger walls.
It's a big wall.
And this is the wall that separates the West Bank. We went there with Bethlehem Lutheran Church, and shout out to them in Minneapolis. Beth Wartmaker.
But this wall had art on it already.
There's graffiti.
There's a lot
from
of
one end to the next.
Yeah, there's
and
a lot of
art. Quite famous artist. Banksy is on the wall. There's a lot of very famous artists that have come to paint on that wall that separates the West Bank.
It's not made it different, didn't it?
What's that?
It made it different. Wasn't
that
a big white brick wall?
You know what? It's interesting. Each of those walls has its own personality too. Mm-hmm. So, you have to be able to accommodate whatever's going on in the culture.
Yeah, and even in Belfast, the walls. I mean, they're also historical, right? I mean, there's a historical element to it too. And they are fascinating. Once that violence starts to ramp down, you know that there's a historical significance to what was created.
So not only did we paint on the wall, we also, wherever we go, we drag our paints and our paper. And so we painted, we were at Dar-al-Kalima College.
Yeah, Dar-al-Kalima College. So we were working with Christians and Muslims. We had translators, which is always a test of anything, of wondering if your concept is actually being translated correctly and if it's being understood. So if you had a variety of languages, which we had here, the interesting thing is that once we hit the art, it was the common language. You no longer had to describe things. You no longer had to give direction. It was just painting together.
Did you do the exercise you did with us where you did spirals and shapes and stuff before you did this part?
No. We didn't do that at that time.
I just see some of the shapes.
Yeah, you know, no, but it just...
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you're going to see those shapes because that's what people paint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, they come up with those shapes.
Dar-al-Kalima is actually an art college that was formed by Dmitri Rahib. Maybe that sounds familiar to our Lutheran circles. He's a Lutheran pastor in the West Bank.
Christmas Lutheran Church.
Lutheran Church. So he helped form this art school. And I had a chance to talk to him, and I said, of all the things that I could think of that you would need in the West Bank, you started an art school.
Why
an art school? And his response was, I can't think of a better way to train our leaders, to have them be able to imagine and reimagine their future.
So if you think of creativity as imagination, imagining a future, it starts to take on a lot more heft. So there we are painting. And more painting.
I have more friends on Facebook now.
These are people from both sides of the world.
Yes.
We did not know.
Oh, we did not. We did not.
They're Christians and Muslims, but they all live on the West Bank. That's a whole other complication of bringing those together. So.
Because to do some of that work, first of all, there needs not to be any guns. You know, I mean, there's a lot of work that happens before you can get to a place where you're actually creating together. And so that creating together becomes part of the process of actually healing and reconciling.
Yeah, so this was more of a working together with Muslims and Christians, plus we had a group of Americans that we went over with and to work with the folks there. So a little bit different dynamic.
So working together is what we do, and what we do is what we teach.
So come tomorrow, you'll experience this.
Yeah,
it's my ad. It's my ad. So the connecting soul work of the arts can open the door to our imaginations to reveal, heal, and renew our spirits, our community, and the world. And this is what we stand on. So the same thing occurred. We were asked to go to Tamil Nadu, Tiruvannamalai in India. It's in the south. And this is a center. It's a Lutheran pastor in the Alcott community. And this is a center that draws all seekers, all religions, all faith, non-faith, together for dialogue. And so what we did over the course of 4 or 5 days, we created a prayer canvas. Inspired by the holding canvas. And so folks from, I think it was about 20 countries and as many languages, every faith tradition imaginable came to paint on this canvas. And how it worked was a prayer for the healing of the world and for creation. And along the edges are personal prayers. So we painted the canvas together, but then on the edges, each person wrote a prayer in their native language. And then they created a piece of art that embedded that prayer into it. So both the color, shape, and form, and words all became prayers. It was a blast. And Tirumanavalai is a holy site for Hindus. And so people travel from all over the world to come to the temple. So the people that were coming through were just amazing to hear their stories and what they were seeking and have conversation if you could.
And art begets art.
And art begets art. So then that evening,
people started bringing flowers and sand paintings. Mm-hmm. So that you can see the canvas is extended with all those scallops, and that's all sand.
Yeah. And then someone came and brought flowers, and she started making these designs. Those are all flower petals. So the art just drew more art and more art and more art. And then we had a beautiful worship service, not unlike what happens here, where people put their lit candles and prayers on the part of the world they wanted to pray for.
So we go out and do those kinds of things. And the way we process what happens when we're in the world is we go to the studio and try to figure out what just happened is actually what we should try to do.
So in the days ahead, whatever chalet we end up in, a little light side.
Yeah, there'll be.
You know we're processing something.
So Chuck and I paint together, which is really weird for artists.
On the same canvas.
On the same canvas at the same time. So most painters, you know, we painted for 20 years before we did this. I painted my paintings over in the left side of the studio. Chuck painted on the right side. And it never occurred to us to paint together because that's crazy. I mean, you know, you don't even want a wallpaper together as a couple. So what happened, one of our trips to Belfast was we were asked to paint a three-panel mural, and it was there were 25 women studying their common history, and this project was fun.
Well, it was funded. We were brought over by the Catholic nuns.
Yeah, we were brought over by the Catholics. It was.
We were going to work with Protestants.
And then it was funded by just the local community center. And we only had 2 weeks of vacation, so we figured we'd better paint this thing together. I mean, that was as simple as it was. We only had 2 weeks. We need to hear their stories before. It's not anything we could have done ahead of time. So we had to hear their stories. So we went and we listened, and then we started painting together.
So on the plane home, we said, well, if that was so cool, maybe we can continue to do that. So let's give it like 3 months. That was 2007.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually a lot of this begat the other, right? So we started painting together and realized that what we were doing was having to reconcile together every time we painted.
So two points of view coming together to create something new. I mean, there's listening and big mistakes that are made and asking for forgiveness and moving forward, right?
Yeah, so our paintings don't look like Chuck's, and they don't look like Peg's. It's always a third thing that rises, and that's the beauty of a reconciliation process. It's not one person's idea or one side's idea. It's something, it's allowing the spirit to enter in and create something totally new.
So our working statement, just to share, our work is a result of collaboration. We go beyond a conceptual sense to include working together on the same canvas. We paint at the same time, forging ideas together that neither of us could create alone. We experience this both visual and verbal communication. And when we begin our conversation in paint, it is important to let each of our voices be heard, allowing expression of our unique perspectives. Full artistry. But we start with sketches.
Yeah, we don't just get the paints out and start. We do start with a lot of sketches. I think this next one shows a lot of the
sort. We start narrowing it down.
We decide together where we want to head. And here we had just gotten back from Belfast, I think, one of our trips, so we were painting about divides.
Yeah, so chaos seems to be necessary to get to the deeper order that unifies our work. Because we know that ideas usually don't move in a straight line, We make intentional space for a more organic and flowing nature to take hold. Sometimes it takes courage, faith, and time to allow ourselves to be transformed by the process. We have found that our usual rushed and me-focused behavior finally gives way to the quiet gift of being together. We bring this process into our workshops where we create paintings in large groups, much the same way we create our own work. So that's our little dance step. Right,
and if Chuck and I have not painted together in a while, it's really, we really annoy each other, really. I mean, seriously, show me the next picture, I think. It's, well, he's painting on me, probably. Or he has just painted. I'm probably.
She's judging what I'm doing.
I'm judging. I'm kidding. So sometimes he gets his big, I call it the big boy brush. He gets it out.
Yeah, we did have one of those moments. We were lettering something. It was for a writer friend of ours, and it was a commission for his wife, who was a writer. And so we had this very thin line. It was splitting the unit or the blue skies, and it had these small letter forms coming out of this white light. And Peg is a lettering artist by trade. So she was doing the lettering piece of this, and
I do not like this story.
And I was watching it. And she finished, and I looked at it, and this was a huge mistake.
This was a very big mistake.
I took the brush, and I took it out.
He just walked over to the painting and took everything that I had.
That's a huge mistake. Right? Yeah. I admit.
Well, the bigger mistake was, I said, you just painted over everything I just painted. And he said, well, it's
like
still
a...
under there. I'm like, yes.
So this is how you dig yourself a really deep hole.
Right? This is how you practice reconciling all the time.
And then I think I said, well, it looked like a lettering exercise. But then...
And I knew in my heart, it pained me to admit. Yeah. But I knew he was right.
And she came back and it was absolutely beautiful. She re-lettered that in there. I was looking for some support.
It was.
Yeah, I know.
You're still paying for that one, aren't you?
Yeah. Over and over.
So, in life and in conversations, things can get messy. The visual language of color and shape help us think about larger issues. In working together, we each bring ourselves fully to the canvas. We move from ego and forced will to a space that holds tension and gives rise to reconciling third voice. It becomes both personal and universal. And through our art, we are always surprised by what we have discovered together and what we find in common. It is what we call painting as prayer.
And it's interesting that for something actually to happen, you have to be able to hold the tension. You have to come center, right? So you cannot just be over here or over there. When we get close to figuring out what has to happen, there is a lot of tension.
But you have to come to that place.
Because, you know, even molecules have to get close together to make something new, right? They don't vibrate and change unless they're close. So, yes?
So have you found that your sessions, like in Israel, Palestine, mm-hmm. and in Northern Ireland, has a third voice risen up as you do this art together with the people from both sides? So that they, I mean, like having the tea together, that's a huge, huge step.
Right.
That doesn't mean that she's going to be inviting them across the street on a regular basis, but mm-hmm. just that third voice is heard so they are aware.
Yes, and we'll do it. There's more to it than just making the painting, and we'll do some of that tomorrow, and you'll see how that might help the process.
But my experience, too, has been that reconciliation is not something that you achieve and then you kind of let go. That it's something that you constantly have to maintain.
You
constantly have to work at it. That, you know, the folks, I don't know how they do it. I mean, sometimes I feel like a cheater because I drop into Northern Ireland for a few weeks and then I come home to my life here. And our friends that work in that conflict all the time can become very discouraged.
Yeah.
Right? Because you do so much work and you think you've made progress and then it all falls.
Yeah, a friend of ours wrote a book and it was called Peace Comes Dripping Down Slowly. And that is true. So here's a peek inside our studio.
This is our studio.
And those are some of our work. If you notice the archetypal shapes on the wall.
And things of tension.
So, yeah, and so sometimes we... All of these are mostly about conflict. And coming together, coming to the center.
And these are paintings that actually are in, where we've worked in Northern Ireland, there's a place called Skenos, which is a ministry of the Methodist Church. And they have a chapel, and these hang in that chapel. It's more fun to look at these in the studio.
Mm-hmm. What size are those art pieces?
40 by 40 is what we usually paint in 40 by 40.
And mostly squares, too.
A lot of squares.
And when we work, we told this in our workshop today, it's so intimidating sometimes to have a blank canvas or a blank piece of paper. Like, how do you start? And so once we have our canvases stretched, we actually pencil a prayer onto the canvas to break our plane. Mm-hmm. And that begins our dance. Looks better on my screen.
Do you have ideas about what these paintings are saying, or do you leave it for the viewer to interpret?
That is a very interesting question. You know, what has been interesting to us is ever since we started painting these paintings and opening our studio, which we have a lot of visitors to our studio, we have had more spiritual conversations than anything. People will just say, oh, this looks like, or bring something up, and there's a lot of conversation. And to us, that's what matters, what the viewer actually sees. Yes, we know what we're trying to say, but that does not necessarily translate to everybody. It's kind of like when you hear the words of a song, right, and you kind of hear what you want to hear sometimes, and it's not really the words at all, but it means something to you.
Yeah, but that whole evoking a dialogue from somebody else is richer than us saying,
yeah,
here's what this is about. I don't get it, or I do get it. It stops the conversation versus how does that feel, or what does that evoke in you?
Yeah, it's the same reason why we use non-representational images.
But if you know some things about architectural shapes.
They're quite a representation.
Yeah.
But we do title them. We do title them.
Well, it's just, what are the titles? Mm-hmm.
They're probably somewhere. But the other thing, you know what? This is interesting too, because yes, we usually have a title, and we often, I will write what I've painted about, mm-hmm. and Chuck will write what he's been painting about.
And it's totally different.
It's not necessarily, most often, not the same thing.
Yeah. In fact, we disagreed on the title of the painting. So we had both. And a conversation about
which that. Really is an invitation for other people to throw in their two cents, and maybe that's how the conversation goes.
So when we started our journey over to Northern Ireland, one of the people that we read was John Paul Lederach. And John Paul Lederach is a Mennonite. He teaches at the University of Notre Dame, and he's a peacemaker, and I would urge you to find his books and read them if this interests you, because he's an amazing man. And you could see in his books how he shifted from sort of a pragmatic approach to peacemaking and brought the art into it.
that he felt that the art and creativity was an important piece to get people to come together, at least to see something a little bit different, to open them up, and it also offered healing to folks who were involved in the conflict. So the quote that's here is from his book, and I think this is kind of instrumental in what we've been working towards and what we believe.
So it says, below and above, outside and beyond, the narrow walls with which violence wishes to enclose our human communities.
And there's a comma, and there is a comma.
We must live with trust that creativity divinely embedded in the human spirit is always within reach.
Like a seed in the ground, creative capacity lies dormant, filled with the potential that can give rise to unexpected blossoms that create turning points and sustain constructive change.
So we must expose and break the false promise that places trust in violence as a defender and deliverer of security. I love India.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Any questions?
Yes.
Does, when people have come together for a painting, has there been anger between any, and how does that take shape in the paintings?
Yes. And It all actually comes out on the paper and it looks like an angry painting. And then we do a lot of, we don't just paint and send everybody off on their merry way, right? So we're able to talk about the painting, which makes you able to see something inside yourself without talking about yourself. And you might experience some of that tomorrow.
Yeah, we did a workshop. Actually, it was at the Grinwald Guild. And
oh, yeah.
We were doing a painting around the table. I don't know if we should talk about this. I guess we could. Yeah.
Well, we can't.
Too late now.
It won't happen tomorrow now
right,
that we're
right. So the table had every age represented at the table.
Yeah.
And we have been talking for 2 days about reconciliation and being honest and open and transparency and all those things.
So, yeah.
Creating art.
So we had the millennials, the Gen Xers, the boomers, and
traditionalists.
So we went all the way from like 22 to 74. But believe me, 22-year-olds do not paint like 74-year-olds.
Yeah, so there's quite a difference in respecting other people's
without
areas.
Giving too much of it away. Actually, it was we actually had to practice actual real reconciliation in our class.
All I remember was walking to lunch, thinking, "What have we done?"
Oh yeah. So we had to come back from lunch and.
But it was talked through. I mean, we were able to kind of connect and why we are so different in the way we painted and respect of space and some of those things.
So remember, millennials are used to working with each other and have been working in groups all of their lives, and traditionalists are very specific and very respectful of everybody's space. So it did not go well.
And we had a project, we did the same thing one time in Northern Ireland, and the thing we noticed is that as we were painting around the table, people started boxing.
So all of that stuff comes out.
Interesting insights.
Do you find a difference in facilitating a horizontal painting versus a vertical mural, and how, I guess, the shapes or your direction, what people prefer? Is there a difference in the physical?
Can't hear her.
Or repeat.
Can you hear me at all? I can hear
you. Is there a difference in the physical location of the painting?
So a shape, a difference in shape?
No, painting it either on the wall or painting it.
Between your conversations and with other people, is there a difference?
We've not noticed that difference. There is difference in colors.
Okay.
depending on what colors we're painting with, that can influence. But not exact, not the way the painting is.
Just the conversations around it.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you said, yes, the conversations are different because usually when we're painting like a mural, it's a long process, it's days, it's weeks. They happen organically, and the other painting is more structured. So it happens in the course of 2 hours as opposed to 5 days, 2 weeks.
And painting murals sometimes are in the rain too, and that's... Anybody else?
So, you're left-handed and you're right-handed. Does that make
That's
it
helpful?
Is that helpful?
Well, it's interesting. You would
only
think,
if we stand like this.
No, we don't paint on a side. So,
Oh, you trade places sometimes?
Oh, all the time. I mean, we paint the whole thing, so it doesn't really matter that in that regard. But. Yeah, it does matter how big the paintings are, because the smaller the space.
It's dry.
Chuck is the big broad brush strokes. And I have a tendency to be a little more.
Well, yeah, because we realized at one point that Peg is a lettering artist by trade and a piano player. So there's a lot of repetition to perfection. And I don't have that skill. I am much more experimental and moving about the canvas. So somewhere in the middle, we create things that neither one of us would create by ourselves. Anybody else? If not, thank you for your attention. And
yeah.
Thank you.
I'm